It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins.
It's Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins this afternoon. And, of course, Harvell and Collins, the law firm, and we will remind you of that throughout the program. We have joining us today Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. Cecil and I have been talking for quite some time about the issue of probate, and so I understand that'll be the continuation, Cecil.
Yes, you and me, Lockwood, the last couple of Tuesdays have spoken about probate, the process of changing title in the state of North Carolina after someone passes on. And the theme of the last couple of weeks has been, Lockwood, that notwithstanding lots of literature out there about one has to avoid probate, the nightmare of probate, the onerous burdens of probate, the right. cost of probate, that really those are overstated, and that probate in the state of North Carolina can be very efficient, not terribly time-consuming, certainly reasonable in cost. And so our listeners just need to know that you have to be cautious about what you read about probate, because it might be coming from a different jurisdiction like New York or Pennsylvania, California, even Florida, where probate is really a whole distinctive species, mm-hmm. not similar to North right. Carolina. Now, with that said, and we're going to move in today, I'm so glad to have Wes with us today, who usually handles our hearings before judges and clerks of court. And yes, Lockwood, occasionally, notwithstanding all that I'm talking about how easy probate can be, there are times that the executor, for whatever reason, gets a little off the path,
all right.
goes astray, maybe doesn't file timely inventories, maybe the inventories are not correct, maybe the process is helter-skelter and the beneficiaries are made to feel insecure about what is happening. And so as one would expect, when an executor veers off the straight and narrow path, then of course we have to be prepared to do some things about that. And we have quite a few of these kinds of cases. They're known in the law as fiduciary law litigation, and Wes, of course, handles the litigation at our law firm. And every now and then there does have to be a hearing, motions, et cetera, in an estate in order to get an executor back on track. And so let's talk about that today. And Wes, I'll just turn it over to you and let you kind of talk for a bit about this. I know that you recently have been in some hearings along these lines.
Wow. Good afternoon to you, by the way, Wes. Thank you.
Yes. Good afternoon, Lockwood. So, historically, here on the radio program, our MC, such as you, Lockwood, or Ben, or whoever it was, Ben over the years, has really liked it when we brought up specific cases when we can. I had one about a week or two ago that really kind of hits a lot of the things that Cecil just mentioned. So, and this is pretty much resolved. So we're at a point where we can talk about this specific case, and that'll give us kind of a little case study on some of these issues that may come up in estate administration. I agree with Cecil. Generally, estate administration is very, very necessary. It's important to do it properly, and it's normally not much of a burden. But sometimes you get, you know, the disgruntled family member, or you get the person who is, you know, litigious.
When you say a disgruntled individual, are we talking about either the executor or the beneficiaries, or both?
Could be either. So okay. That'll kind of segue us right into this fact pattern, Lockwood. So basically, the father was the last living parent, and then you had the daughter and you had the son, okay? And the will left everything equally to daughter and son. The father had a couple of accounts that he had set up as joint with right of survivorship between daughter and son.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and as we know, those listening over the years on the program understand that the will doesn't control these accounts that pass by joint with right of survivorship, okay? And one of them had been set up in this way through use of a power of attorney by the daughter, meaning the daughter, relatively shortly before the father died, signed an account designation designating one of his accounts, which was several hundred thousand dollars, as joint with right of survivorship. So when he died, that all went to her and did not go to the son. Okay. So we start going. This is in a different county, by the way, and we did not represent the estate, but the daughter was the executor.
Okay.
There was real property in Carteret County, but the estate was pending in Nash County. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So up around Nashville, Rocky Mount, you know, that area. So, be it as it may, we ended up representing the daughter. Okay, but and the reason we represented her individually is because the son did a couple things. He filed a petition to revoke her letters. Okay, meaning he filed a action before the clerk of court in Nash County to have her removed as executor, and also filed a lawsuit about these joint account designations, arguing that they really weren't joint account designations and they were ineffective, okay, as a matter of law. There were a lot of emotions in this case, a lot of principle, it seemed, that the son was just, you know, upset with the daughter and wanted to make things difficult for her. So be it as it may, so here we are going through this estate. The estate has been pending for probably 4 or 5 years now. It's been through a lot of litigation. But what happened with the lawsuit that he filed was that the daughter agreed to really just not fight over one of the accounts. That was the one that she set up as joint with right of survivorship using the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And just for that being, you know, to go right into the estate instead and to pass out under the terms of the will, which would be 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so boom, lawsuit over, we settled it. The other account went to her directly, and that one stayed just the way it was because it had been set up with a joint account that was signed by the father back many years ago, like in 2013, I believe, like many years before he died. So that litigation is over. But once that litigation is over, I reach out to opposing counsel. This is the attorney for the son. And, you know, I ask him, I say, well, you know, we're done with the case. We're now ready to wrap up the estate. But you still have this pending petition to revoke letters out there, okay? You still have this petition you filed almost 2 years ago where you're attempting or your client's attempting to have my client removed as executor, but we're ready to wrap the estate up. And everything that you're arguing about in this petition was just resolved in this lawsuit. So you need to go ahead and dismiss that too.
Uh-huh.
They didn't agree to do that, okay? Well, then I asked them, and this is now in email, so we have a paper trail, okay? I'm asking them, well, please tell me why you would not do that. And the two bases, really, this is kind of where it gets down to what it takes to remove an executor. Lockwood, the first basis is a breach of fiduciary duty in the person's office, and that office is Office of Executor, okay? Their allegation was that she breached her duty through use of the power of attorney. Well, that was before her father died. So, and I explained to them, there's a case directly on point. It's called In re Durham. And what that case says is that you can't have an executor removed because of actions taken before the death.
Right.
Okay? Makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? If they breached their fiduciary duty while they're administering the estate as the executor, fine. The court can look at that, can make a determination as to whether there was, in fact, a breach. And then if there was, then the clerk of court can have this person removed. But that they didn't even allege that. So that was the first prong.
Uh-huh.
The second prong is whether they have a private interest that would hinder their ability to administer the estate. And I asked them, the opposing counsel here via email, what is the private interest? Explain this to me, because you don't have breach of fiduciary duty, because that you're arguing about use of power of attorney, which is not allowed,
mm-hmm.
as a basis for removal. So tell me what the private interest. Well, we believe that your client has a private interest because she's still seeking commission, okay, as an executor. And as we talked about on the program before, an executor is entitled to 5%
right.
of commission for doing their job, up to 5%, under the discretion of the clerk of court. And that's 5% of personal property, not real property, just personal property. So I responded back to them, well, that's not a private interest. Based on your argument, every commissioner in the history of commissioners who is seeking a commission, which is like every commissioner,
right,
has to be removed. That makes no sense. So I let them know that, you know, if you don't dismiss this, then I will have no choice but to proceed forward to seek recovery of attorney's fees, not only for proceeding forward with the with their motion and my motion for attorney's fees, but also all the work I've done relative to this petition over the past 2 years. Otherwise, just dismiss it and I won't seek my attorney's fees. Well, they didn't dismiss it.
I want to take a quick break here. We're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell, and that's Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, about the issue of probate. And I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask you here in a few minutes, Wes.
Sure.
But I just want to make mention of this, remind folks. And by the way, if you're interested in finding out more information, I always recommend give them a call, 252-726-9050. That's Harvell and Collins. Wes, you were talking a moment ago about the issue of intransigence, I'm going to use that word, of the other family members, and I'm
right.
using that in the form of, the obviously, the attorney. They wouldn't dismiss this letter of revocation. So now, what are your options?
Right. Well, let me answer the why first,
mm-hmm.
and then go into the options. The why, with regard to why they would not dismiss it, is because they wouldn't admit this, but it's pretty obvious to me that they wanted to use that petition to revoke letters as leverage against my client. Okay? They wanted my client to be concerned that perhaps she would be removed. And if she's removed, by law, you get no commission. So, but you have to have a basis at law for the person to be removed. You can't just, you know, file a lawsuit, for example, without any factual
right.
or legal basis for purposes of trying to strong arm someone. And that's what they were doing. So I made it as clear as I possibly could in emails back and forth with opposing counsel about this. And again, I gave them a very easy out. Just dismiss it so we can wrap up this estate. And I will not seek recovery of attorney's fees. That's pretty much a no-brainer.
Right.
Just do that, and we're done with that, and we finish the estate. Well, so then, to answer your question, what is my option then? Well, my option at that point in time is to file a motion for recovery of attorney's fees in this matter that is before the clerk, so the clerk of court in Nash County hears it, and we had a hearing on that. It actually took two hearings. That's a whole other story. But so I had to travel to Nash County twice to deal with that, and actually had five trips up there for
wow.
multiple various things relating to wrapping up this estate. But that's a different story. So the standard with regard to that, there's two different ways I could have done it. I could have filed a Rule 11 motion,
mm-hmm.
which is basically a motion indicating that the claim that you brought is not well grounded in law or in fact. That probably would have been appropriate. I felt like this one fell more into what's called the non-justiciable claim category. And what that means is that what you pled is not justiciable, meaning it's something that it doesn't have merit based on the facts. And my argument was, you know, number one, use of a power of attorney cannot be the basis for removal, as I've already mentioned. And then, you know, number two, there was no private interest at all, never was a private interest here. She just had a job to do. She had an attorney who was doing the job, dealing with the administration of the estate. So we had that hearing and, you know, went through the process of putting on evidence with regard to all this. And then, lo and behold, when I put on evidence with regard to my motion for recovery of attorney's fees, the other side then said, well, you can't get your – this can't be considered yet because the court hasn't even heard our motion, our petition for removal of your client as executor. So my response to them was, well, what are you saying? You're saying that we have to have another hearing on that? Yes. Okay, so that kind of, I think, ticked off the clerk of court, really. Here I am moving for my attorney's fees, and we've all traveled from 2 or 3 hours away.
Uh-huh.
We're ready to wrap up everything in the estate, and they're saying, well, we're not going to even go forward with our petition to revoke letters today. So, but there were other things that were dealt with on that day. I don't want to weigh down this conversation with that. But then, upon the clerk ruling for me on the other things, they then dismissed their petition to revoke letters. So they finally did dismiss it. Well, that was too late because in my emails I gave them a deadline by which to do it, which was a year and a half before.
A year and a half before?
Yes. Oh. Well, some of the delay was COVID.
Okay.
So there was the courts weren't really that open, and it was hard to get to a hearing. So, yes, it was a year and a half before. At any rate, return to the clerk. Had the hearing, kept it kind of short and sweet, really, because she had already heard my arguments. And then she ruled for us and gave us all the attorney's fees as shown in the affidavit of my billing clerk who put that together. That's, you know, you got to put on evidence of what your attorney's fees are, and that's the right way to do that, have an affidavit of those. So then they filed notice of appeal, which is, again, a good point for folks to kind of understand. You have a 10-day period in which to file the notice of appeal from the order of the clerk in an estate proceeding, and then that goes to the Superior Court. And so we had the hearing on that about a week or so ago. And that is the standard on that really is a record review, Lockwood.
Right.
And what that is, you don't start what they call de novo, meaning you don't start fresh, you don't start new, you don't have a new hearing before the Superior Court on appeals from the clerk on estate matters. You have a record review, okay? So you have the transcript from the hearing before the clerk provided to the court, and then there's argument with regard to the law that applies to that. So the court has to determine whether the record, the evidence, supports the findings of fact in the order from the clerk. And then the court has to make the determination whether the conclusions of law in the order are supported by the findings of fact that are in the order. And then the court has to determine whether the law is accurate. And so we had that, you know, like I said, a couple of weeks ago, and the Superior Court affirmed the clerk's order. So that kind of meandering saga really as a result is just as a result of this one litigant, this brother, and frankly the brother's attorneys just being unreasonable.
Talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. This is Wes Collins talking about an experience he had. Cecil and I have been talking for a couple of weeks now about the issue of probate. Wes, first quick question. In both cases, the clerk was the judge in the initial case, and then the Superior Court. The Superior Court case, was that a jury case or just before the judge?
Yeah, that one is just a motion.
Okay.
It's not a trial.
All right.
So that is just before the judge. It's not a not an opportunity for a jury there.
Okay. The other question, and I want to go all the way back to the beginning here on the fact that they challenged the topic of power of attorney.
Right, using the power of attorney as a basis for removal. Right?
Okay, but here's my question: if Cecil is designated as a fiduciary, he's not a fiduciary until the. And I'm asking this in the form of a statement, but he's not a fiduciary until the moment that it kicks in. That is to say, my death. Once I die, an individual is identified on a will as a fiduciary doesn't make them the fiduciary until the death. Am I correct on that?
Right. Their job as executor does not begin until death.
Right.
And frankly, until they're qualified as executor,
okay,
by giving their oath before the clerk. And now the key, us lawyers, obviously words make a big difference.
Right.
The statute with regard to a petition to revoke letters testamentary specifically states that one of the basis for removal is breach of a fiduciary duty in the office. Our case of In re Durham interprets in the office as the office of executor / administrator of the estate, not power of attorney.
Okay.
Not some other position like trustee.
Uh-huh.
Not anything like that. It's just in the office.
Okay.
So that's just a matter of understanding specifically what the statute states and also having a working knowledge of how our courts of appeals have interpreted that language.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't do that as an attorney, then you're going to potentially put yourself, your client, in a place of peril, which is what happened here. Even though I tried to give them an easy out, they just wouldn't listen to me, and the result of it is that their client was taxed attorney's fees of about $30,000.
Wow. All right. There's another aspect. And, of course, we're talking about attorney's fees, but this also gets to the issue of an estate. I've got several questions on this one related to, statute of limitations or statute for limits. Here's a case or an estate that's been tied up in a legal dispute for quite some time. As I recall, you said at the outset about 3 years. The sad part about this is there was the opportunity to distribute the assets to each of the beneficiaries, and the beneficiaries could then do something with those assets. Let's just simply say invest them or something of that nature. Well, that time has been wasted for those beneficiaries. It strikes me that, you know, there's more than just a matter of the moment of time of the dispute, but the length of time of the dispute. Is there an issue there?
Yeah, well, that happens sometimes in litigation because obviously the estate attorney does not want to make the final disbursement,
right,
of the estate until, you know, the final accounting is approved and all of these pending issues such as the petition to revoke letters are resolved. Not only that, every time we had a hearing, which every one of the hearings was prompted and precipitated by the what I would consider to be frivolous actions taken by the brother. Every time we had a hearing before the clerk or before the superior court, the attorney for the estate prepared for that to a certain extent and then attended that.
Oh, wow.
So the attorney for the estate is rightfully charging the estate for his time relative to that because the court would expect him to be there.
Right.
There may be questions of relative to the administration of the state where he would have to answer those and tell the court, you know, where are we with regard to the administration? What's left to be done? You know, these type of things.
When you go to
court for these things, especially in superior court, it's not as though you're the only show in town. I mean, that you get, like we showed up in Nash County, there were probably 20 or so motions to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? Well, I've got to wait my turn,
right?
And the estate attorney has to wait his turn. And that's all time that that gets billed to the estate,
Lockwood,
half of which comes out of the pocket of the brother.
Let me go back here a little bit of perspective. This is great, amazing conversation, but we all know that this is, you know, the great exception to the rule. This is why we brought this up today, to kind of contrast with the last couple of weeks where I've been saying that probate can be in North Carolina. We are a friendly probate state, and that it many times goes just smooth as a whistle, efficiently and without a lot of cost.
Right.
This case, of course, is the great exception to the rule. And there are those exceptions. Now, let's put that in perspective a minute. That's not meaning that North Carolina is an onerous probate state.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not what this case means at all. This case is descriptive of, you know, parties in a family that are at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they're going to be at odds with each other for a long, long time, and probably have been before there was even a death in the family.
Right.
And whether or not the estate had been in a trust, or whether or not there was estate transferred by power of attorney, these conflicts would have still arisen.
Right.
Okay. And it's not the probate law in North Carolina that created these burdens that Wes had to overcome. It's simply, once again, unfortunately, you know, the personalities, the conflicts, the inability to compromise, the inability to maybe potentially handle their fiduciary obligation appropriately, things of that nature, lack of communication, all of the human dynamics that we deal with in every way. So absolutely, there are these cases, just like Wes has been describing to us, where litigators are in the court system for several years handling these matters, but it doesn't come down to the fact that there's a problem in the law. It comes down to a fact that there's some problems in the facts.
Based on the observations that I'm picking up from our conversation with you, Cecil and Wes, Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell, we're talking with them about the issue of probate. Is one, the size of this particular estate was significant. I'll just use that description. And it showed that it would have worked smoothly through the probate process, to your point, Cecil, if all the parties had been willing to participate and been reasonable, I'll use that description, without the conflict. But as you've just pointed out, Cecil, even though probate is simplified and is smooth and is not as complicated as it is in other states, there is still the ability for an individual to go through the normal process of conflict if necessary, as you were describing, Wes. So probate is not, as to your point earlier, Cecil, is not something very sinister or challenging. It works smoothly as a rule. You just have these instances, Wes, as you were explaining, that accommodates the need for handling it through the courts.
And that could have easily, these same conflicts would have arisen in the context of a living trust that we often hear about, will substitutes such as payable on death or time on death, you know, no matter what the circumstances would have been, these people would have been in conflict with each other, and we still would have been involved in litigation.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that amazing story. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins about the issue of probate. And by the way, I just want to make a comment about this, Cecil. You mentioned it last week, the whole concept of living trust. As you said earlier, that's not something you if there's a purpose for a living trust, you're going to determine that. Just to avoid probate is not necessarily justification for living trust. And I really appreciated that comment. I just want to remind people of that. Wes Collins, Cecil Harvell with us, and Cecil Harvell, of course, just a moment ago explaining this. As always, gentlemen, we appreciate your time here on Let's Talk Legal. And I want to remind folks, that's Harvell and Collins, the number 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. That's, spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Lockwood.